Welcome to the Liminal Forest podcast, an audio exploration of how we make peace and restore balance with nature. My name is Matthew Yeomans, and I'm the creator of the Liminal Forest. Today, in the first episode of this podcast, I go on a walk up a hill with the author Robert Penn. Rob has built a reputation for writing both eloquently and passionately about his own passions, including cycling in It's All About the Bike, trees in The Man Who Made Things Out of Trees, and most recently, baking in Slow Rise. Rob is also the co-founder of Stump Up for Trees, an ambitious and important project to plant 1 million trees in the Brecon Beacons. The first part of the project involves planting 135,000 trees on Bryn Arw, the hill behind Rob's home. One very warm summer morning, I went to visit Rob to learn more about Stump Up for Trees. So today I'm in the absolutely beautiful and stunning hillside country just above Abergavenny, and I'm going to go on a walk with the author Rob Penn, and he's going to take me up a hill and show me a fascinating project called Stump Up for Trees. Rob, thank you very much for taking part today.
Terrific, Matthew. Lovely to meet you, and great to be involved.
We started our walk next to Rob's own small private woodland, and I asked him to describe it and what makes it so special. And Rob, describe to us what we're looking at here in your own little kind of private woodland.
Private woodland. So this is says mixed species. It's a kind of, there's a stream that runs through the woodland. So predominantly alder along the stream,
which loves kind of wet, damp conditions.
Exactly. Right? Love their feet in water. One of the beautiful features of the Black Mountains landscape actually is, particularly in winter, you observe this. So all the way along the streams, you see the streams winding down the hillside, and they're all alder trees planted alongside them. So in the winter, when you know the purple, the alder turn purple in the tops in winter, in deep winter, it's the first sense that spring's coming for me. And you see these little purple lines of ribbon winding down the mountainside all over the Black Mountains. Absolutely magnificent.
Oh, fantastic. We walked a little bit further, and we came across a gorgeous, steep valley jam-packed with trees. It was an extension of Rob's own woodland, so I asked him to put into context why there was such a rich variety of trees in this one small valley.
So this is the Arw stream, which runs down through here, and it joins the Fenny River and flows into Abergavenny. And, you know, it's very steep-sided nant.
Yep.
And it would have been wooded, you know, for a very, very long time. And so that little bit of woodland there is mine. That's well established.
Yeah.
This is a new plantation. It was planted 12 years ago.
Okay.
You see the trees are already, you know, off and away and doing great. And then that little bit of woodland there just runs round on the very, very steep kind of, from a ledge there down to the stream, very steep-sided. That is a bit of semi-natural ancient woodland, and it's only a hunch of mine, but it has the kind of feel of a woodland that's never been cut down.
Yeah.
So, you know, we know that trees cover most of these hills in the Mesolithic.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, during the Neolithic, they were cut down for hunting purposes and whatever. But I think that's never been touched. So it's just too steep for some pre-mechanisation, too steep to fell the trees and turn it into agricultural land.
And this is where you find, isn't it, and in some of the kind of the Celtic rainforests and as you go through Wales, these very steep ravines, which still have, well, I imagine there may be, you know, this maybe not here, but the sort of thing you'd have some sort of sessile oak there and different things, the ones that really grab to the sides of the ravines.
Yes, that's right. And incredibly rich ground flora, which, including many indicator species of ancient woodland. But it's just got this magical feel. And it just in terms of biodiversity, I mean, you know, we might walk in there later, but you just walk in, particularly on a spring morning or a summer morning, and you get a wall of bird sound. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And you get that sort of strange sense of numinous sense. I often think that's just rich biodiversity, that sense.
How did you, you have an obvious love of trees. How did you fall in love with it first?
I think that I grew up in the Isle of Man, which is actually relatively, has relatively poor treescape. You know, rather like Ireland and parts of Western Scotland. But the trees that it did have were magnificent. My dad was always interested in trees. Actually, he was more interested in birds than trees. So he used to take me to the woods to look at birds rather than to look at the trees themselves. And then when we moved here 18 years ago, I knew instinctively that I wanted to associate myself with the landscape somehow, and established very, very quickly I didn't want to farm sheep. So it's like, well, you look around, so what? How else can you attach yourself to the landscape?
Well, I mean, what we're looking at here is just unbelievably beautiful, isn't it? We have this layer of woodlands in the valley, and above us we have the hills, and then Sugarloaf up there?
That's Sugarloaf, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you've got lots of, different types of landscape here, which is just fantastic. So, the woodland down here alongside the stream, and then, agricultural pasture where the sheep are, and then it goes out to Frith.
Yeah.
Or Coca, as some people like to call it.
And Frith is basically the area above the traditional grazing lands, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think down here sometimes it's called Coca, as in Code Kai, Woodfield.
Right.
So it's the transition area, and then you go up onto the heather and bilberry moorland, and then up to the peaks of the hills.
From the woodland in the valley, we started a short but steep climb to the top of Brynarw. I was a little out of breath on this very hot day, but not nearly as much as Rob Spaniel, who you can hear in the background. Rob, this is absolutely breathtakingly beautiful up here. Describe to me what we're looking at down. We're looking south, right?
Yeah, so we're looking south. So you can just see the kind of rooftops of Abergavenny. Just to the east of us, you can see Skirrid, actually both Skirrids, Skirrid Vach. And then you can't quite see it, but Newport's down through there. And then just beyond that is a Bristol Channel and the Devon's on the other side.
You can just
Somerset,
see that,
I guess, actually. So you can see it. And, this is the Fenny River flows down here, joins the Usk just to the south of us here. Lots of little pockets of semi-natural ancient woodland, some new woodland creation, sheep fields, in various shades of green at this time of year. And it all looks rather at peace with the world, doesn't it?
It does. Now, you came here 18 years ago.
Yeah.
Did you know you wanted to come here, or did you just kind of discover it?
I think I knew about it. I used to go camping in the Black Mountains as a kid. And then I was at university in Bristol. I got my first mountain bike, and we used to come over here and get a lot of punctures and break bikes. So I knew about it, and then we moved and rented a house just the other side of Abergavenny on very close to the Usk River.
Lovely.
It's really beautiful, and we had an incredibly happy 2 years there. So we knew we wanted to move to the area. And then, I can actually remember it. I cycled over this hill in front of us here and came down what is called Betters Pitch, into the kind of out towards the Arrow Valley, and just had one of those moments. I was like, this is definitely where I want to live.
And you were living in London at the time?
Yes. So, well, we left London to rent that cottage for 2 years. But yeah, we moved from Brixton.
Excellent. We've walked up quite a steep hill, and we have a panting dog.
Yes, that's right. It's quite a hot day for a spaniel. Yeah.
It's a very hot day today. So we are now, the reason we walked up, we're on Brynarw. And the reason we've walked up here is that this is the site of very impressive and somewhat ambitious, I think it's fair to say, Stump Up for Trees planting project.
Yeah.
Now, tell me a bit about how the idea came about, and then maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you're actually doing here.
So the Brinaru plant was my neighbour Keith Powell's idea. Keith is a seventh generation Black Mountains farmer, a vet. He's very green, lives off grid in the Grinney Reckon Valley, just around the corner from here. And his family farm is at the foot of Brinaru. He's my neighbour. And he's an inveterate tree planter. He's planted many thousands of trees over the years. He once rather wonderfully drove from Wales to Madrid with a boot full of conkers and planted them by the roadside the whole way, which is fantastic.
As he went.
He just pulled over from time to time and put one in, which is brilliant. And I was rather hoping that there's a kind of spread out avenue of horse chestnut between here and Madrid. Anyway, he has planted on various bits of his farm, and he felt that he had taken up the slack in terms of agricultural production on the farm, and he got the right balance between trees and agricultural production. And then he looked at the hill, Brinaru, and thought, well, why don't we plant trees up there? And so he initiated the idea, and it was a very long process. It's the first plant of its kind on common land in Wales. And so it had to go through all of the regulatory, exhaustive regulatory process, and had to get planning permission to erect a fence on common land, none of which was straightforward. Lots of people have helped along the way, including the Woodland Trust and Coed Cymru, who have been brilliant, and you know, lots of people understood from a long way out that this is actually quite important, because partly, as we just discussed, an awful lot of the common is unused by the sheep, and partly because it has incredibly low levels of biodiversity, and partly because if you want to address flooding, you want to do that where the raindrops fall up here on the hills. So planting trees is a good idea for many reasons. So lots of people helped. And the project came to fruition this winter, and we planted 135,000 trees. And it's, you know,
and not one species, right?
Well, no, so a mix of native species that you would expect to get up here. So everything that's native to it. And we use local seed provenance as much as one can these days through buying from nurseries. So it's sessile oak, rowan, hazel, hawthorn, bit of blackthorn, wild cherry, silver birch, downy birch.
This is a druid's dream.
It is a druid's dream, that's absolutely right. And we've not used plastic tree guards, so we planted with canes, so bamboo canes are in the ground. So there's a tree by every cane and a tree in between every cane, but we've not used plastic tree guards, which is incredibly important for a variety of reasons. It's a risk. You know, we don't quite know what we're going to get out of it, but Keith's overplanted by something like 30% in order to de-risk the not using plastic tree guards. So it's rabbits and voles that eat the trees, and that's why you put the plastic tree guard on. And so we thought we'd overplant in the expectation that rabbits and voles will take some of them. There are various other experiments here. There are some biodegradable tree guards made from sheep's wool. We've used some of those in an experiment down this side of the hill. We've planted with tripod canes. So you get three canes together, make them into a tripod, plant trees, maybe three or four trees between the tripod legs, and then the bracken grows and falls on top of it. The concept is that the tripod will hold the bracken off from smothering the tree and killing it. So there's lots of experiments going on here, planted with different tree heights, so saplings at 60 centimetres, some at 120. Again, all of these things will be measured. We've done baseline flora, bird and Lepidoptera surveys, and we hope to carry those on to keep the information coming and see what the woodland creation does to change the bird, Lepidoptera and flora species on the hill.
And now some people may ask why. Why take this somewhat barren hill?
Yeah.
And why plant here? Does it connect to things? Is that important in some way?
So I think there's I mean, it's a really good question, and it's one that we asked ourselves a lot. And in the end, we concluded that, so in the national park, we've got 14% tree cover. And, you know, nationally in Wales, it's about 15%. European average is about 36%. So we're way down on our tree cover, and we have been for a very, very long time. And we now understand that trees, and in terms of sequestering carbon, are an important tool in mitigating climate change. They are not the complete and final solution. They are part of the solution. And we think that we need to increase that tree cover in the United Kingdom, you know, the whole of the United Kingdom, not just Wales. And that, you know, the government has its own targets. So the Welsh government's target is to create 2,000 hectares of new woodland every year. And in 2019, as this project on Bryn Arrow is coming to fruition, we stumbled across a statistic that the Welsh government had created 80 new hectares of woodland, so that's 4% of its target that year. And, you know, and I think this is a critical moment in, you know, our relationship with the planet and with climate change. And, you know, we've got to act now. And that's why we thought that you take what is really unusable land for anything else. The sheep don't go there, as we've established. And it is barren, supports incredibly low levels of biodiversity, and it could be repurposed for something greater and something that fits into a bigger picture of where we're trying to head as a species. And I also think that, you know, and you kind of mentioned it, you know, in your question. So what we have across the national park, as I've said, is 14% tree cover. The large majority of that is conifers, supports incredibly low biodiversity. And the semi-natural ancient woodland across the national park is profoundly fragmented. And actually what nature needs, you know, all the sort of, what the wildlife needs is connectivity. It likes long strips or connected woodlands. So what we're doing here is we've designed the plant in a very particular way to link up with all of the bits of ancient woodland which are around the hill.
Yeah, and making that connectivity is hugely important, which of course is part of the thinking behind the new National Forest of Wales idea. Now, I can't help but think as well, Rob, that this isn't just about biodiversity. I first learnt about Stump Up for Trees, not in a newspaper or anything. I learnt about it when I was on that train going from North Wales down back to Cardiff.
Yes, brilliant.
In the autumn. And on the side, in the bracken, in the very brown bracken in winter, had been carved out Stump Up for Trees.
Yes.
Would it be fair to say that this is about making a statement?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I mean, the Stump Up for Trees, the idea of cutting Stump Up for Trees in the bracken, and you know, the slightly misconstrued line of Welsh poetry, Daweso Zael Avrin, which means there will be leaves on the mountain again, was the idea of a local artist called Mick Petts, who's a landscape artist, and he's quite well known in Wales. You know, he did some wonderful landscape scale projects like Sultan the Pitpenny and Llanelli in the Millennium Park. Anyway, he lives in a house that looks at Bryn Arrow.
Oh, right.
on a kind of hillside over there. And, you know, we started the charity Stump Up for Trees pretty much as the first pandemic started. So all the publicity, you know, ideas that we had and the events that we were supposed to go to, they were all scratched, gone. And so we thought, you know, what are we going to do to get our name out there? And so Mick said, I've got it. Let's cut Stump Up Trees and the line of Welsh poetry in 80 metre tall letters, 250 metre long phrases along the hillside. And everybody on the train, like you, and everybody driving up and down the A465, hopefully not crashing, will spot it. You'll start to get your name out. So we did, and it had a great effect.
That's great. And recently you did a some sort of partnership with the doctors and nurses at the Heath Hospital.
Yes. So we had a lovely. So what we're trying to do at Stump Up Trees, plant a million trees across the Brecon Beacons area, and slightly driven by the fact that, yeah, this statistic, which I just gave you, that the Welsh Government in 2019 planted 4% of its target. And we thought, right, we need to augment that. So what's holding it up? Is it bureaucracy? Is it the process? Is it lack of funding? And we thought we'd set up a very small charity to do something community up, So we're totally community-led and we're farmer-facing to try and increase the woodland cover in our immediate area, the Brecon Beacons area. And our ambition, as I said, is to plant 1 million trees. And that could be anywhere between 400 and 1,000 hectares, you know, depending on planting density. But that's what we're up to. And so, you know, we came across this statistic about the Welsh government only planted 4% of its target. In the same year, the Glastonbury Woodland Creation Scheme, which is the Welsh Government Woodland Creation Scheme, which we think is a really well-designed scheme on paper, that it was oversubscribed 10 times. And as long as I've been interested in trees, the rigmarole has always been that there's no land for woodland creation. And here you had land being offered up for just that. And we thought, okay, so there's a misfit there. So what we need to do is we need to go away and raise the money from private means, and actually we'd like to do it in a blended way, so take some government money but also raise some money from private means and give that as grants to landowners to create woodlands. And that is exactly what we're doing. And one of the people who came to us, you know, very early on was Dr. Jack Parry-Jones, who runs, he's a consultant who runs the ICU unit at Cardiff University Hospital. And he came to us, with, you know, rather wonderfully and said, I'd like to create a COVID memorial hospital for all the patients who have been through our ICU unit over the course of the pandemic. So we planted, so he's raising money to plant 1,600 trees, and we planted 1,200 this winter just gone on a, you know, farmer's site. And rather wonderfully, the farmer completely got it and he's decided to give public access to that woodland so people can go walk through it, which is fantastic.
Fantastic. So Rob, we're walking up here at the moment and, you know, I know this is part of the hillside where you've planted lots of trees, but all I can see at the moment is bracken. Tell me a bit about where it fits into, I guess, the big plan and the ecosystem.
Well, you know, bracken's a super plant. It's incredibly invasive. It's also incredibly strong. And, you know, bracken is basically the, you know, the primary reason for not just rewilding or not allowing natural regeneration to take place here. You know, you rewild on bracken, basically you get bracken. And so what we...
So are they mortal enemies, trees and bracken?
Well, so the old adage is trees hate bracken and bracken hates trees. So as soon as the tree is above the bracken, the one thing the bracken can't tolerate is shade. So as soon as the trees are above the bracken, they start to shade it out and it retreats. So then you get much more complex development of much more complex ground flora and various other ancillary advantages of tamping the bracken down. But left to its own devices, this entire hillside will be bracken.
Yeah.
You know, it is an incredibly strong plant. So what we have committed to do is really to kind of create an enhanced environment for natural regeneration to take place. And we're augmenting that by planting some trees, augmenting that or giving it the best chance possible by erecting a fence and excluding the livestock. And then thirdly, and perhaps most significantly, we are proposing to control the bracken for at least 5 years until the trees are above it in height. So what happens is in the autumn, so we you know, after years of careful observation, we don't think the bracken outcompetes the trees over summer. It may slow down growth, but it doesn't actually kill them. But in autumn, when the bracken dies and it folds over downhill, inevitably, simply with gravity, it collapses on top of the very small saplings and smothers them. And it may not kill them in year one, but the kind of build-up of the tilth on top of the trees in years two and three eventually does for them.
As we walked around Brynarw Hill, I asked Rob to explain the importance of getting community working together for tree planting and fighting deforestation. So Rob, it's very interesting that you're doing this kind of big planting project here, while at the same time, obviously you're neighbours with a number of sheep farmers.
Yep.
And I know it's an important thing for you to keep a balance between community, environment. Can you just explain a little bit more about that?
Yes. So the idea of planting on this common, on Brynarw Common, was that you split the common in effectively in half and you use the land, which is incredibly steep and in summer covered in heavy, thickets of bracken and brambles, and the sheep simply do not heft there. So actually, it's kind of, in terms of agricultural production, it's kind of dead land. And we also know that underneath the bracken, very limited biodiversity is supported. And so Keith Powell, who's my neighbour here, he's a farmer, but it was his idea to go to the other commoners and propose the idea of repurposing half of the common to woodland creation and, you know, all the ancillary benefits that provides, wildlife habitat, natural flood management, soil quality, etc., etc. And so he proposed to them the idea that you plant half, but erect a fence, and this is a critical point, and this helped bring some of the commoners on board. You fence it to exclude livestock for 12 years only. So the planning permission that was granted for the erection of the fence lasts for 12 years. So the concept is you create this woodland, allow the trees to establish themselves, a fence comes down, livestock can graze it.
Because this is a key point, isn't it, is that when we think of the dynamic of wilding, of planting, of protecting ancient and semi-ancient kind of woodlands, it's not a either woodlands or sheep, is it? It is allowing woodlands to get to that point where sheep that are very, very effective munchers actually have a positive effect in the woodland rather than negative. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that's totally fair to say. So, yeah, I mean, yes, in terms of the kind of sheep munching, I mean, you know, if you put sheep into the area where we planted, a reasonable herd, I really don't think it would take long for them to get through 125,000 trees that we planted. So they are very, very effective.
Maybe not before lunchtime.
Yeah, maybe not exactly. Maybe not before, but, you know, they are very, very effective. So in excluding them, you allow the trees to establish themselves, basically get above sheep height, right?
Yeah.
Simple as that. And then you can bring the livestock back in to graze underneath, which I think is fine. And, you know, the kind of macro point there, which you make, is that what we don't want to do is to significantly affect agricultural production through woodland creation, enhancing woodland creation, because that just displaces agricultural production to other places. You know, it would be easy to you know, make a link between affecting agricultural production in Wales and deforestation in the Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Finally, as we headed down off the Stump Up for Trees planting project, I asked Rob about the plans for the woodland as it grows and develops over time. So Rob, what you're doing here in the planting is amazing, but I see you've kept part of the hillside where you're not planting, and I imagine that would give affording a view of how the woodland kind of grows and everything. I mean, it would be great to get people up here, wouldn't it, at some point to see it? Do you see walking trails and things coming?
Very much so. So at the moment, particularly on the side of the hill where we've planted, it's basically impenetrable for, you know, all of summer because of the bracken and the brambles. I mean, you literally cannot walk through it. And so what we hope is that when the trees start to shade the bracken out, it will actually open it up. So the fence line's, you know, I think it's 4.5 kilometres in length in its entirety, and we're putting in stiles every 200 or so metres all the way along, in the hope that in the end, you know, once the bracken's begun to be shaded and the trees are becoming established, people will cross over the fence line and walk through the new woodland.
So we may yet see the Robert Penn Heritage Trail.
I don't think so. But it, you know, I think it's great for people to observe these woodlands as they grow. You know, sometimes you walk into an ancient woodland, you don't question how it got there, but actually maybe we'd have greater respect for them and care for them more if we did question how they got there and understand.
Oh, exactly. You've been listening to my walking chat with the author and woodland expert Rob Penn as part of The Liminal Forest, an exploration of how we make peace and restore balance with nature. In the coming weeks, I'll be going on more walking chats, so stay tuned and please join me for the next episode.